Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to cut through the noise and give you the essential insights. Today, we're setting our sights on Kenya's financial landscape, specifically the Capital Markets Authority, the CMA. There's been this, well, quite an explosive regulatory push lately, really designed to diversify and deepen their capital markets.
It really is a remarkable story, and it feels very much like planned growth. I mean, the CMA has been around quite a while, since 1989, right? And it was set up with this very clear dual job. Regulate, yes, but also develop the markets. Make them orderly, fair, efficient.
Yeah. Regulation and development.
Exactly. And the long-term goal, the strategic vision, it's massive. They want to position Nairobi as an international financial center, NAFC.
NAFC, okay.
Yeah, and that's not just, you know, some statement on paper. We're seeing really aggressive action now to actually make that happen.
And that action, that's what we're really digging into today. We've looked at the sources, the details on this recent flood of licenses, regulatory changes, mostly concentrated in 2025. So our mission here is to understand the strategy behind it all. What new avenues are opening up for you, the investor? And maybe just as important, how is the CMA making sure the market stays, you know, safe and sound with all this growth?
Okay, so let's unpack the basics first. The CMA, it does more than just hand out licenses, right? It's supposed to be like an architect for the whole system. What are those fundamental pillars of that dual mandate we should keep in mind as we look at these new licenses?
Yeah, architect is a good word. You can break down the foundation into maybe four key areas. Mm-hmm. First, obviously, is the traditional regulation part. Licensing, supervising all the market players, making sure public offer stocks, bonds are transparent.
Standard stuff.
Pretty standard, yeah.
Yeah.
But second is active market development. They're not just passive umpires. They're out there promoting the market, doing research, pushing for new products, constantly tweaking the rule book. And that responsiveness, that tweaking, is really key, isn't it? We saw that, I think it was October 2025, when the CMA actually put out a call for public consultation. They were specifically asking the industry, hey, how should we amend the rules for things like REITs, real estate investment trusts, and for foreign investors? That seems proactive.
Extremely proactive. And that touches on the third area.
Yeah.
Keeping that legal and regulatory framework up to date, it has to be, you know, stress tested constantly to keep up with innovation.
Makes sense.
And the fourth pillar, maybe the most critical for building trust, is investor education, public awareness, and crucially, protecting investor interests. You simply can't deepen markets if people don't fundamentally trust them.
Okay, that trust point brings us right to the evidence, this 2025 licensing spree. What's really striking here is how focused it seems. Like the CMA deliberately targeted, what, three distinct strategic areas?
Yeah.
Pushing diversification way beyond just banks and stocks.
That's exactly right. The approvals, when you line them up, show this laser focus on filling specific gaps in the market. So the first big strategic area was specialized real estate and logistics. In November 2025, they licensed Africa Logistics Properties Limited, RML, as a REIT manager.
RML.
And this wasn't just any property fund. It's specifically aimed at channeling capital into the industrial and logistics real estate sector, warehousing, distribution centers, that sort of thing. And there's a clear link, a deliberate alignment with the government's affordable housing agenda, using capital market tools for big social development projects.
Right. Using market structures to tackle national infrastructure priorities. Makes a lot of sense. So what was the second strategic push?
The second was a really strong move into wealth and institutional management. They're clearly aiming at, you know, high net worth individuals, institutional money. They licensed Victoria Wealth Management Limited. And the name isn't the point as much as the scope of what they do.
What kind of services?
Things like treasury trading, managing unit trusts, offering access to offshore funds. This signals the CMA is serious about attracting and, importantly, structuring sophisticated domestic capital,
yeah,
which, you know, you kind of need to do before you can really go after the big international private equity players effectively. And alongside that, we saw licenses for specialized investment advisors like Gelia Advisors and Intermediaries, Silverhouse Capital, building out that whole ecosystem.
Okay, specialized real estate, wealth management, and the third area felt very forward-looking. Climate finance, targeted funds.
Absolutely. Climate finance and what are called alternative investment funds, or AIFs. So September 2025, you see fund manager licenses going to groups like Kenya, Climate Ventures Limited, EDC Asset Management, Kenya Limited. This isn't just, you know, putting a green label on things. It looks like a strategic play to position Kenya as a leader in sustainable investing in the region.
And those weren't small players joining the market.
No, not at all. These approvals actually brought the total number of licensed fund managers up to 47. 47. And get this, together they were managing something like Canjar's $596 billion in assets held in collective investment schemes, CIS, as of June 2025.
Wow, $596 billion, that's serious scale.
That scale is the key takeaway, I think. And to handle that kind of volume, you need the right plumbing. So the CMA also licensed key corporate trustees, big names like Stanbic Bank Kenya, Cooperative Bank of Kenya. Their job is to provide that governance oversight for all these collective investment schemes.
Right, the checks and balances.
Exactly. And they didn't forget the tech side either. They licensed TPXM Global Kenya as a non-dealing online foreign exchange broker. Shows they're supporting those tech-driven trading platforms too.
Okay, so we've covered the CMA strategy, the scale of these new assets under management. Let's pivot now to accessibility. For you, the individual listener, maybe looking beyond just buying shares in a company, what does all this product diversification actually mean? What's available?
Well, the market has definitely become much more diverse and in some ways more accessible. I mean, you still have your standard bonds, treasury bonds from the government, corporate bonds from companies. Those usually have minimums, maybe around cash, 50,000 or cash, 100,000, so roughly $350 to $700 equivalent. But the real game changer for accessibility, I think, was the Amakiba bond.
Ah, yes, Amakiba. That felt like such a classic Kenyan innovation,
yeah,
right? Using mobile tech for finance. Remind us, it was a government retail bond, 3-year term, tax-free.
Tax-free, yeah, offering 10% interest. But the crucial part was the minimum investment, just pay chef 3,000.
3,000 shillings?
Yeah.
That's incredibly low.
Exactly. Designed so almost anyone with a mobile phone could participate. A huge driver for financial inclusion.
Okay, so bonds, including the very accessible Amakiba. What else? You mentioned collective investment schemes, CIS.
Right, CIS. Think of them like pooled funds. Unit trusts, mutual funds, different names, same basic idea. Instead of you picking individual stocks or bonds, you pool your money with other investors, and a professional fund manager handles the portfolio. The benefits are pretty clear. Instant diversification, usually better liquidity than holding individual assets, and lower costs because of economies of scale.
And there are different types of these CIS funds.
Oh, yes, several types, depending on your goals and risk appetite. You have money market funds, very low risk, focused on short-term debt, good for parking cash you might need soon. Then fixed income funds, holding mostly bonds for potentially higher returns over the medium term. Equity funds investing in stocks. And balanced funds that mix asset classes.
And connecting back to that first strategic area, real estate. REITs fit in here, too.
They do. REITs offer a way to get exposure to the property market without, you know, buying an entire building yourself.
Yeah.
You can invest in small units. There are basically two main types in Kenya. Income REITs, or IREITs, which own properties and generate revenue from rent. And development REITs, DREITs, which focus on developing properties and making money from capital gains on sale or construction profits. And remember that RML license. We also saw the approval of the Acorn build-to-rent DREIT, specifically targeting affordable rental housing. Again, linking back to that national agenda.
Interesting how it all ties together. And one more area, Islamic finance.
Yes, the CMA has consciously made space for Sharia-compliant finance. They've facilitated products like Sukuk, which are essentially Islamic bonds, and also Sharia-compliant versions of REITs and other funds. It shows a really holistic approach, trying to attract specific pools of capital and bolstering Kenya's image as a potential regional hub for Islamic finance, too.
Okay, fantastic range of products. But with rapid expansion comes risk. Let's talk market integrity. This growth is exciting, but it absolutely needs robust protection mechanisms. What structures does the CMA have in place to safeguard investors to maintain that trust you mentioned earlier?
Trust is everything, you're right. So beyond the CMA's own internal licensing and oversight units, there are two main external facing safety nets, protection and enforcement. The first is the Investor Compensation Fund, the ICF.
The ICF, what does it do?
Its purpose is to provide some compensation if you as an investor suffer a financial loss because a licensed broker or dealer fails to meet their obligations, basically, if they go bust or act improperly with your fund.
Okay, so a safety net. But looking at the scale we discussed, those hundreds of billions in CIS assets, the maximum payout from the ICF is Kirpesh 50,000 per investor. 50,000, that feels small. Is it more about providing a basic level of comfort for very small retail investors, or is the real protection mechanism somewhere else?
That's a very fair point. The ICF amount is limited. It's probably best seen as a baseline protection, mainly covering smaller retail losses from, say, broker insolvency. The real teeth of the regulatory framework, the serious deterrent, lies in enforcement. Specifically, the Capital Markets Fraud Investigations Unit, the CMFIU.
CMFIU. Tell us about that.
It was set up back in 2009, interestingly, as a collaboration between the CMA and the Kenya Police Service. The idea was to consolidate criminal investigations specifically into securities-related fraud. Things like insider trading, market manipulation, or, you know, brokers fraudulently selling off client shares.
So actual criminal investigations, what kind of penalties are we talking about?
They're significant. We're talking fines up to cash, 15 million, or potentially prison time up to 7 years. That kind of penalty structure sends a strong message. It shows the CMA is serious about deterring financial crime and maintaining the market's reputation. And that, arguably, is the most important thing for attracting both big domestic money and cautious international capital.
Okay, so there's the official protection. But the individual investor, you listening, you have a role too, right? What are the key due diligence steps the CMA recommends you take to protect yourself in this evolving market?
Absolutely. The investor has responsibilities. It's pretty basic stuff, but crucial. First, only deal with entities that are actually licensed by the CMA. Check their website. Don't take advice or hand over money to unregulated outfits. Simple, but vital.
Makes sense. What else?
Second, you need a central depository system account, a CDS account. That's the official record of your ownership of stocks, bonds, REIT units. And third, and this is critical, take active control of your trading account. Don't just hand over your login details. The CMA specifically advises subscribing to the CDSE's SMS alerts. You just text register to 22372. Getting an immediate text message whenever there's any transaction activity in your account is probably the simplest, best way to guard against unauthorized trades or transfers.
Be informed, stay protected.
Exactly. An informed investor is a protected investor.
Right. Let's zoom out one last time then. Connect this whole regulatory drive back to the bigger picture.
Yeah.
You mentioned the licensing of Victoria Wealth Management targeting high net worth individuals. And this broader theme was a big focus at the Nairobi Private Wealth Conference in 2025, wasn't it?
Precisely. When you start attracting these specialized wealth managers, the conversation shifts. It's not just about buying and selling stocks anymore. It becomes about multi-generational wealth planning, complex stuff. So yeah, events like that Private Wealth Conference, they dive deep into topics like succession planning, structuring global investments, tax efficiency strategies, all the sophisticated services that HNWIs demand.
And global strategies too.
Definitely. Discussions often include things like global mobility, maybe even touching on areas like citizenship by investment. It shows how high net worth individuals structure their lives and assets globally to manage risk and plan their legacy.
And ensuring that domestic wealth has a solid legal foundation for that legacy planning is key too. For instance, the Law of Succession Act here allows for things like rectifying errors in grants after someone passes or adding newly discovered codicils, you know, amendments to wills.
Yeah, it shows the legal system needs to be flexible enough to handle complex wealth transitions smoothly. It all has to work together, the market, the regulation, the legal framework.
Okay, so let's try and wrap this up. To quickly summarize the narrative we've traced, the CMA seems to be really executing on that dual mandate regulation and development. The 2025 licensing activity wasn't random. It feels like a very targeted campaign hitting specialized sectors, logistics, REITs, wealth management, climate finance. The commitment to adding real depth to the market seems tangible.
I think the implication for the future is pretty clear. This concentration of activity, particularly in specialized areas, isn't just about offering more products. It signals a deliberate strategic effort to attract very specific types of capital, both that sophisticated domestic wealth we talked about and targeted international investors looking for these niche opportunities. This feels like a crucial phase in trying to make that long-term vision, Nairobi as an international financial center, a concrete reality.
So we'll leave you, the listener, with this final thought to chew on. Given the strong focus we saw on DREITs, those development real estate investment trusts, and their explicit link to the national affordable housing agenda, how might this convergence, this blending of capital markets with core social development goals, actually reshape the investment landscape here in Kenya and maybe the wider region over the next, say, 5 years? Something to think about. And as always, the CMA advises, and we echo. Do your homework. Explore the specific investment objectives of any collective investment scheme before you commit your capital. Protect yourself.